This recording is a production of Faith Builders Educational Programs. This presentation was recorded at Teachers Week 2019, held at Faith Builders from July 29 through August 2.
Okay, I'm a father, and because I am a father, that automatically defines pretty much my role. I'm a father, therefore this is my role, and therefore this is my job description. So let's do that with teachers. I'm a teacher. What's my role? Well, who am I? Just try to back up a little bit. I'm a teacher, but who am I in the life of the student? I want you just to think about that a little bit. Who should I be in the life of the student as a person? We'll come back to that. I'm going to basically let you just think about that because that's an important question. Because who you are is at least partly involved or helps to shape what's my role, and from my role then, what are my responsibilities? I think the longer I teach, I find that to be a challenging question. Really, who am I in the life of the student? Well, a role is simply a set of responsibilities, and I'd like to sort of divide this into two groups. Responsibilities, they're defined. It's your job description. Now, maybe your school doesn't have much of a job description. This is a typical problem of many schools. You just kind of find your way. You're the teacher. Now, some schools have done a good job of trying to just put this into some words. And there's some policies, there's some things that you can read to help understand your job description. It's limited by the authority that is given to you. It can be well planned and prepared for. Now, I'd like to talk about this authority just a little bit. Your responsibility and authority are well connected. See, if you don't have authority to do something, then it's not your responsibility. And teachers struggle with this sometimes because there's some things we would like to do and some things we would like to take care of. But it's not our responsibility because we don't have authority. So think of your authority as shaping, in part at least, your responsibilities. And when the board calls you, the school calls you to do certain things, they will give you authority to do those. And if you're not given authority, it must be outside of the responsibilities that you have. A little trickier is opportunities. And this is one that you will struggle with. Probably the longer you teach, the more you'll struggle with this question. It's a little undefined. It takes wisdom and prayer. Opportunities take a heart of love and concern, but here is where we can overstep very easily. Because you will be given opportunities, and we'll be looking at these in more detail as we go along. You will be given opportunities, and you have to decide, do I have what it takes to move into that opportunity? Is it proper for me to move into this opportunity? Most of this has to do, I think, with relationships, with mentoring and discipling our students. That's minimally written down under your responsibilities, under your role. But these opportunities will come every single day. And I want to spend a little time today thinking about that because it's somewhat outside of your role, and yet it's right there and takes a lot of wisdom to think through how to relate to those opportunities. All right. I'd like to take a little break from talking for a couple of minutes. And I would like you to look at this picture and spend just a few minutes. What roles do you see on this picture? So go ahead. Write a few things down. Talk to each other about it. And I'll ask for your response in 2 minutes or less. All right, give me some feedback. What roles do you see on these pictures? Quickly.
Lecturing.
Lecturing. All right, teaching. I mean, you are a teacher, right? What else? Again?
Mentoring.
So what you said? Yes. Excellent. Mentoring. What else?
Team leader.
What else? All right, I wondered if that would come up. Conflict resolution. My first grade son saw the picture down the bottom right, and he said, "Are they in trouble?" Well, maybe, maybe not. Anything else? All right, answering questions. Yes. Discipling, mentoring, working with particular needs, academic. All right, thank you for that. Our jobs are very complex, aren't they? They really are. There's many facets, components, aspects to our job. Some of them, can you see by this picture, clearly fall in the category of responsibilities. This is my job. When I was asked to be a teacher, that's what I thought about. I pictured myself in front of students, talking to them, explaining the lesson. Picture to the left. And as you talked to teachers and thought about your experience as a student, you maybe saw some other pictures. Probably the one in the center top isn't too scary for a lot of people. Some teachers say, well, I really like sports. You know, here's a, you know, maybe being a teacher is a good option. Okay, pretty attractive there. And then you think of the other things that come with it, and it moves into opportunities and takes a lot more carefulness and thought. All right, roles that are not yours. I want to look at some things sort of on the not yours. And maybe this will feel, what a relief. You're not the parent. That's one important thing to understand, unless you're teaching one of your children, which I've taught a number of mine, and it's quite a delight. But for a general statement, you're not the parent. The heart of the student belongs to the parent. Now, if you have not taught school yet, you would understand what I'm saying, but it will make more sense as time goes on. The heart of the student belongs to the parent. And I know that there's situations and there's people sitting here saying, yes, but don't you? Folks, I understand. This is a complex question. But it's a principle to remember. It's a general statement. It is possible to steal the heart of the child away from the parent. I remember talking to a high schooler, this was years ago, and I do not remember what we were talking about, but he said, I wish I could talk to my dad like this. Ah, that's an important moment. It would be wrong, it would have been wrong for me to say, well, you know what? You can just talk to me anytime you want. It's okay. I like talking to you. Would have been better to say, and I don't remember what I said, to say, well, you know what? I'm sure your dad really cares about you a lot. Maybe he finds it hard to just talk. Why don't you sometime, when you just feel comfortable, just relax, ask your dad some of these very same questions. I'm sure he cares about you. And it would be, you know, it might be a little awkward, but I think he'd be willing to talk to you. Why don't you try it? Try to return the heart of the child to the father, because I'm not the father. There are opportunities, and this is where it gets difficult. There are opportunities to minister in a meaningful, careful way to the needs of your students. But be careful. Some parents are more okay with that than others. And you can lose trust from a parent if you overstep. Remember, you're not the parent. The heart belongs to the parents. You're not a parent sometimes when you wish you would be the parent, like at church or the church picnic. Have you ever wished you were the parent that moment? Resist the urge to reach front and tap him or her on the shoulders. You're not the parent. Now, if the child turns around and looks at you, it's amazing what a raised eyebrow can do, because they probably care about what you think. Students become kind of sensitive as to where is the teacher anyhow, my teacher, especially if you have a good relationship with them in church or elsewhere. But you're not the parent. See, your authority stops, doesn't it? It doesn't reach there. So if your authority isn't there, then your responsibility isn't there. Frustrating as that may be, I don't know if people know what I'm talking about, but I think at least some, maybe a lot of you do. You know, those snowballs flying around after church, it's not your responsibility because you don't have authority to really do anything about it. Now, if you have a good enough relationship with your students and can do it in a nice way, you can walk over and say, hey, what's going on? Come on, fellas. I mean, there's ways you can reach in, but carefully and only under the right circumstances and relationships. You're not an agent of cultural change. And this is going to come up a few times from various perspectives because of other talks that I want to have. But I'm just going to kind of hit it briefly at this point. Maybe mention it again later. You're not an agent of cultural change. How many of you are new teachers? This is your first year of teaching. Okay. How many of you are teaching in a church community, whether it's your first year or not, a church community outside of your own? You're in another. All right, so quite a few. All right. So what are you going to do if you go into the school setting or you're in the school setting already and, wow, it is just so different than where I went to school, or so different of what I think it should be? And one of the terrible mistakes would be to go in there and say, well, I mean, day one, hey, I mean, well, you mean you don't do this? Well, whatever. I mean, how can you run school if you don't do that? And you mean you do that? Oh, that's the curriculum you use? Really? Why did you use this? You're not an agent of cultural change. Your job description certainly isn't to come in and fix everything wrong with the school, is it? Is that what they asked you to do? Again, some of this we'll talk about later. There's opportunities that will come in time, with trust and experience and respect. But be so careful. You know, there's other former students, I mean teachers, who are probably watching you, right? And there's, if you're in administration, there is possibly former principals or administrators who are watching and are sensitive as to what changes you might want to make, because they can be seen as a little bit of a reflection, or definitely a reflection, on how things were when they were in charge or when they taught that particular grade. So be careful. Just because your ideas are good, I'm not knocking that. I'm not knocking inspiration, aspiration, vision whatsoever. But be careful how and when you bring that vision to the team and into the school system, or you will lose the very people you need to bring with you for those changes to happen. You will lose the very people you need to make positive changes if you're not very sensitive and careful and just take your time. Again, we'll talk about that maybe a little later, but I think this is so, so important, or you'll have a lot of things to fix later. You're not the savior of every or any situation. You know, the longer you teach, the more you will see and you will have windows into difficult situations. And I'm sure those who've taught a number of years, if we would discuss some of the needs that you see in your community particularly in homes, it becomes a tremendous burden. And you care about it, and you should care about it. But you're not the Savior. And to learn, as big as your heart may be, and you love these children, and you care so much about a particular need, somehow to be able to detach sufficiently to survive emotionally yourself. And I've heard teachers, and I've felt this myself already. I have to. I mean, what are we doing? How can this situation exist? I mean, this child has to be rescued. We have to do something. Did you talk to the ministry about it? I mean, I'm not the Savior of every situation. Yes, God may call you to sometime, somewhere, somehow be involved in helping a difficult situation. But take time. Pray a lot about it. Share carefully about it. And don't have this sense of, I need to fix this problem. You didn't create the problem. Probably isn't a crisis. Was there before you came. Maybe God will open the doors for you to help and to be involved. Again, it's the opportunity word versus responsibility. I mean, I would want to be very careful in telling stories about this subject. But I've taught enough of students and enough of years to have seen some very concerning things. From a child who was wished dead by his mother to children watching some terrible things in the home, in relationships between mother and father, a father leaving and on drugs, a mother leaving. Those situations are tremendous burdens and make school a tremendous challenge. And knowing those things help us to understand our students. But they're problems we often can't fix. We should teach our students in the context and understanding of those needs, but they're outside of our role. On the other side, again, pray and ask God to open doors of opportunity to minister and to bless and to care and to help that dear hurting child. But you can't fix the problem. You're not the Savior of the situation. Well, what is your job? If it's not all those things, there are still some things to do. Of course, your primary role is to teach. And it takes most of your time and energy. But what takes most of your time and energy is not necessarily the most important role that you have. It takes most of your time and energy, but not maybe not most of your heart. Maybe the most important part about being a teacher is not actually standing up front and teaching. I probably vacillate a little bit on this. There's times and moments or years that I think, you know what? I'm the teacher. My job is to get up front and teach these lessons, and guess what? It stops and starts there. There's other times that my heart moves so much toward concern and care about what's going on in the hearts of my students that what keeps me awake at night is not how to teach the next math lesson. It's what's going on in the life of this student. And I'm sure a lot of you know what I'm talking about. So, of course, it takes time and energy. That's your job description. But in some ways, it's not the most important role. Or maybe I should say it's not the most, this would be better to say it this way, it's not the most sobering role that you have. Although on the surface, it's what we do. We teach. We're called teachers. Pursue creative, effective ways of communicating the lesson. That's what you're doing here at Faith Builders in some of the classes that you're taking. How to teach math concepts, how to get students to love English. I don't know if there's a class like that, but there should be. How to teach reading, how to do. Those are excellent classes to take. In fact, I'd encourage you to take those classes as well as the management classes. Did you ever notice how full those classes are? I guess that's where our worry is. You know, how to manage, how to discipline, preventative discipline we're really interested in. Oh, those are all great classes. But how to teach well, those are very worthwhile classes. Pursue those creative, effective ways of communicating the lesson. And remember, that's part of becoming an effective teacher. Understand your strengths and weakness. This I find so fascinating. As I look at a couple hundred teachers here in front of me, can you imagine the variety of personalities that are here? You know, none of you are exactly the same. Of course not. Probably good, isn't it? So we have teachers who are very expressive and very bubbly and outgoing, and you know, they come into the classroom with all the pizzazz, and I mean, they just love life and love students. And those of us who are not exactly that way look with some jealousy on those teachers, right? And there's other teachers who are more stoic, disciplined, and those who are on the outgoing side look with jealousy on those well-disciplined, well-mannered people who don't get themselves in trouble nearly as often. I think it's worth some time. What are your strengths? What kind of a teacher are you? Are you an academic teacher? You teach school because you love books. I've taught with quite a few teachers through the years. Our faculty now is, I think, 12, and I've taught for quite a few years, so I can think of different teachers. And I can think of a few who are very academic teachers. Wow. Why do they teach school? Because they love the books. They love learning, studying, and then they enjoy, of course, teaching and imparting that. But, you know, the students are there. Good. Glad I have an audience. But boy, do I ever love to teach and to study. I'm fascinated with information. Other teachers are quite so on the other end. They're the relational. I love children. I love being with children. And you know what? Teach school. That's where you can be with children and get paid. Sort of. There's maybe also fitting in there somewhere the creative teacher or the stylistic teacher. They just love a place where they can have a theme, especially the ladies, right? And that's sort of their thing. Yeah, teach the books. Yeah, okay, whatever. And yeah, children, but boy, I just love my room. I love the decor. I love bulletin boards and posters. And I love the creativeness and the opportunity to be creative. Guess what? You're all good teachers. Don't try to be somebody else. Have you ever tried it? Don't try to be like another teacher. Oh, I didn't say don't learn. But don't try to emulate them and almost kind of reinvent who you are. That's no fun. You won't enjoy it very long, and you won't do well, and you won't even be like that other person. What's that little saying? Don't try to be somebody else. That place is already taken. You know, be what God has created you to be. But think of the challenges that go along with your particular set of gifts. There is a range, folks, somewhere that works and doesn't work as a teacher. And so maybe bring in the edges would be one way of thinking about it. So the person who is a sanguine, I believe they're called, and they are high energy and like to talk a lot and they're full of fun, we love those people, of course. But those of us who are that way are a little more undisciplined. Right? If it wouldn't be for last minutes, we'd be in big trouble. Right? And we forget a lot of things, and we make a lot of last-minute photocopies, and, you know, the art projects are planned up to the last minute. There's some of you out there. I can see it. Yeah. Well, don't say, well, that's who I am. That's just how I am. You know, I hate planning ahead. I hate schedules and writing down lists of things. That just gets me all, you know, befuddled. And I just, you know, it's okay. It works. Well, you know what? It works, but it could work better, maybe. Pull in the edges. Just insist on becoming more disciplined if that's where you are. And by the way, I tend to be on that edge of things. And my wife has helped me. I have better lists than I used to. Check things off. I write more things down and use lots of sticky notes, and it helps. But I've had to work hard at bringing that edge in of just a little more, you know, I'll get by somehow. If you're the rather stoic teacher, have a hard time building relationships, and I've worked with teachers like this, very academic, very disciplined, expect the same out of their students, studied well, the outlines are always done well, the syllabus is, well, there's challenges with that as well then, right? Winning the heart of the student. You would rather eat at your desk and page through your notes than eat with your students. Now, go eat with your students, all right? Well, I don't know if they really want me to. Guess what? They probably do. They probably do. Get that out of your heads. That your students don't like you anyhow, so they just, well, what can you do about that? Just learn to ask questions of your students. Just try to become comfortable around them when they go out and play volleyball or whatever they're playing. Younger students, whatever they all play. Just go out and be among them. Just be with them. Be accessible. And you'll find that can grow. You can learn to enjoy your students better. Please don't just say, well, that's who I am. I just, you know, I'm half scared of children. They intimidate me. Well, students intimidate me as well. That can be amazingly young students can be intimidating. Aren't you glad they don't know that? How intimidating they really can be? I don't think they know that. Bring the edges in. Say, no, wait a minute. This isn't going to be healthy. It's not going to create a healthy environment. I'm going to need to learn to just relax, be among my students, ask good questions, and try to develop the ability to connect with your students. It does really matter. You're not becoming a different person, but you're working out of who you are to try to expand where you can expand and bring in the edges where you need to bring in the edges. The creative teacher, kind of the same thing. Don't become obsessed with all of those things. They're great things to do. They're probably your energy is doing those things. But you need some energy to study. You need some energy to teach your classes well and to correct the papers and do all those other things. So that's what really gets you going. It's a big part of teaching. But remember to keep that in check and include those other important aspects. Another role is to create a safe, calm, structured environment where learning can take place. Teachers, this is not only an opportunity, this is a responsibility. To create a safe, calm, structured environment where learning can take place. Now, I know this has many parts and pieces to it. And I'm sure some of you are taking classes where they talk about this. A structured classroom. So I'm not going to say a lot about it, just a few things. Let me emphasize, this is your job. If you tolerate it in your classroom, it's your problem. Don't say, well, I don't like it this way. I don't like the restlessness. I don't like all the whispering in the room. I don't like the dirty floors and the pile of books behind their desk. But it's just sort of how it is. And, you know, it was that way last year with the previous teacher. And so they're used to this loose arrangement. No, folks, it's your problem. It's your project. I know it sounds really cruel, but it's true. You have the authority, I trust, given you by the board to have a safe, structured, calm, joyful, relaxed classroom. That's tough. Of course it is. I've never taught a group of students that. It was just so easy. Wow, these students just walked in, just fell in place, you know, and it's just the environment's just what I want. My year last year was one of my toughest years for that, and I loved it. I plan to follow that group of students into the next grade. Went from 7th grade to 8th grade. Of course, I taught those grades in many years. Used to teach other grades. But just to keep working at it and calm them down, give the consequence where I needed, it was my job. I couldn't say, well, you know, they're just kind of a restless, high-energy group of students, and so, you know, it's just how they are. No. It was my job to decide what I can tolerate, what I can allow. And so take the authority. You know, students want a calm, safe place. Did you ever have students write out a few rules for your school? How many have done that already? Why don't you write down some ideas? Oh, only one or two. I suggest you do that. Especially when you're talking about, you know, some things you would like to be different in the room. Again, you have to do this in ways that the students can handle, and you're accessible, and you're not doing it under a, you know, a red face, and everything's, you know, really tense. So, students, what do you think? Where do you think we should draw some lines here? Write them down. Write down some things you would do if you were the teacher. Wow, most of them are really strict. I'm serious. Of course you got those clowns on the side who would have 2 hours of recess every day and would not have English or penmanship or about everything else. You know, lump those and throw them away. But most of the students come up with amazingly sensible. Why? Because that's what they want. And they wish you would take charge to create that kind of a classroom. And I didn't say exactly what that is, because guess what? That depends on your personality. I've been in classrooms where the teacher felt more comfortable, I assume, with it just being so quiet and so tight. I mean, I just sat there hoping I didn't sneeze or, you know. I mean, it was like, wow, I was glad to get out. Everything was very pious. And got your English out and just, wow. I couldn't really be there. But I've also been in other classrooms where, wow, teacher was up front and sipping coffee. And I've sipped coffee already, but, you know, sipping coffee. And all right, so folks, you know, we got to pay taxes. You know, that's really, you know, it's... that's sad, you know, but that's part of the country we live in. And so, students were talking. There was amazing amount of trash lying around. And wow, I mean, what's happening here? I don't think the students really would have wanted it that way. But if that's what you allow, that's what they'll do. But don't blame them. It's your fault. I visited my brother many years ago. Of course, I was enjoying this because I had been teaching, and he was in his first year, so I visited him in a different school and walked into his room, and I knew it was a tough situation. And so he's teaching one class, maybe like 6th grade, and there's a 5th grade boy, and he decides it's time to clean up the desk. So my brother's nervously looking over there, looking at me, and I'm looking at him. Oh, boy, this is fun. What is he going to do? So this boy, Patrick, dumps things out and finds a wad of tape, and oh, he wrinkles it up, and you know, it's a little sticky. Oh, what fun, you know, and messes around, juggling a little bit, and he's there trying to teach and write on the board and look at me and look at him. And I enjoyed it too much because it was my brother. That was very cruel. But you know, it was his responsibility, it was his fault. Of course, we talked about it later, and he doesn't care that I say this, but he could have just said, hey, you know what? Your desk does need to be cleaned out. I'm glad you know it, but not now. I need to teach a class, and that's going to distract everybody, and I think you have some things to do. Hey, why don't you get your math out and work on it? We'll look at your desk later when we have time. All right. But it's a little tough to do that, isn't it? And so, well, you just hope he cleans half of it out, or it goes okay. No, it's your job. You set the rules. You got to create the environment, and they want you to create that environment where they feel safe and a calmness in the room. And there's some students in particular who need that, and it's the very ones who create the distractions. The very ones who are the sloppiest, have the worst desk, they're the ones who need it the most, and you're failing them to not step up to the plate and help them think through how to structure their day. And sometimes that's a really one-on-one project, isn't it? You cannot leave in the morning until I give you the nod of approval. Your desk is clean enough to start the day. We've had students where we've had to take every imaginable toy out of the desk. I mean, every eraser that wasn't necessary, every pen, every sticky note, every gadget, because they became huge distractions, just endless messing with and messing with. Other students had a mug with some things on it. Maybe had a little eraser that was in the shape of an animal. That's them. They can handle it. This fairness thing isn't the discussion. This child can't handle it. Help him or her understand it. They do understand that. So here's what it takes. Why? Not because it irritates you, but because that's what's best for them. That is your role, is to create that environment. I know it's difficult, but work toward it. To mentor and nurture students, this moves again into the opportunity question. And again, I'm not always sure really how to feel about it, how to work through these questions myself. But it is your job to deal with a student who's a smart aleck. At least those things, let me say it this way, those things that affect the day-to-day function of the school become your responsibility / opportunity. The things that do not directly affect, at least visibly, what's going on in the classroom and in the school become more opportunities. Hope that's making some sense. In other words, how this child really is dealing with the fact that mom left. See, I had to work through those kind of questions, and I'm sure some of you did as well. Or dad left. Time to just talk about that and hear their heart and pray with them. But be careful, of course, with those things. But those are opportunities that I'd love to hear a discussion on those. But that's somewhat outside of what's going on at school. But the smart aleck, the complainer, the tattletale, the person who's a bad sport, those affect what's going on every day and affect relationships. Those are your opportunities / responsibilities to mentor and nurture and talk with those students. Don't allow a bully in your room. Don't allow somebody to control your room. You're in charge of your room. You know what I mean by the bully? It's that boy who has enough of swagger that when the teacher says, all right, time for recess, and I'd suggest you don't do this a whole lot, actually, because of this very problem. What do you want to play today? Let's see, shall we play tag or shall we play penny on the track or volleyball, whatever you do in your room? And you give two or three options. It's that person that almost everybody looks at to see his scowl or nod of approval. It's that person. He's controlling your room, or she is. Well, let them do that. That person needs some nurture and a few other things as well. However you want to spin it. They need to be mentored because you say, how many want to play volleyball? And they start reading and then they look back. I want to play volleyball after all. Why? Because he's sitting there like, you know. How many want to play softball? Yeah, he raises his hand. Everybody looks like, yeah. Okay, so everybody wants to play softball today. Of course not. Everybody's trying to keep this boy happy. So you make the decisions, teachers. Or close your eyes and raise your hands. Okay, everybody's head down. Don't even give them a chance. Heads down. All right, how many want to play volleyball? I'm going to give you a choice between two. Done. And that, or you just decide what to do. Those students need to be mentored and nurtured. Don't allow them to ruin your classroom. And it's pretty easy to figure out who they are, right? It's the person Sunday morning when a friend says, so, how's school going? The first person that comes to your mind, that's him or her. Right? Anybody have students like that? It's the first person that comes to your mind? I can't tell if anybody knows what I'm talking about. Okay, a few do. Or maybe it's three or four, worse yet. Be a role model. We'll discuss this briefly later. That is certainly one of the roles that God has given you through the authority of the school, to be a role model. The longer you teach, the more this is going to matter to you. The more this makes you feel like, should I really be a teacher? I'm working with other people's children. Does that weigh on you? It weighs on me more probably because I have 7 children, and some are through school, and one little girl still not in school. So I think about this more and more. The influence of the teacher. They're my children, but I'm trusting them to role models. And if you take that lightly, you should not teach school. And I'm sure you don't take lightly. And as time goes on, it will weigh heavier and heavier on your heart. That's what keeps teachers awake at night sometimes. Listen and look for signs of trouble. Do not look back in anger or forward in fear, but around with awareness. A little saying that I really like when I read that. But be an attentive teacher. You know, we have to multitask, don't we? We're focused, we're teaching, but what's going on in the classroom? What's going on at recess? We're not looking back in anger at what they did yesterday, and we're sure they're going to do it again, and they better not do it again, or they're going to be in big trouble, or I sure hope they don't get away with anything. We can be that kind of a teacher. I don't want any stories going out of the things they pulled off behind my back. Now, we're not looking around because of our good or our reputation or in frustration or in fear, but we look around with awareness, being very intuitive as to what's going on. Is everything okay? Are relationships okay? What are we doing with those who aren't fitting in? What are we doing with cliques? What are we doing with those who seem really sad? Just a sense of awareness to listen and look for signs of trouble. Again, move somewhat in the opportunity direction as to what to do then about those needs. God bless you as you find your role as a teacher.
This recording and many others are available through Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. Order online at www.christianlearning.org or call 877-222-4769.